Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 FY 2022 earnings conference call of Jindal Steel and Jindal Stainless Hisar. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Chandak. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much, Renju. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the fourth quarter earnings call for Jindal Stainless and Jindal Stainless Hisar. I would like to thank the management team of Jindal Stainless for providing this opportunity to host them for the call. We have from the management side, we have Mr. Avinay Jindal, Managing Director, JSL and JSHL. Mr. Anurag Mantri, Group CFO of Jindal Stainless. Mr. Jagmohan Sood, the Whole-time Director at Jindal Stainless Hisar. Mr. Ramnik Gupta, CFO of JSHL. Mr. Gautam Chakraborty and Ms. Shreya Sharma from the IR team at JSL and JSHL. Without much ado, I would like to hand over the baton to Mr. Gautam Chakraborty for his opening remarks. Over to you, Gautam.
Thanks, Vishal, and welcome everyone. We'll begin this call with the brief opening remarks and following which we'll be having the forum open for an interactive question and answer session. Before we start, I'd like to state that some of the statements made in today's call may be forward-looking in nature, and a disclaimer in this regard is available in our results presentation that was shared with you earlier. I would now like to hand over the floor to Mr. Avinay Jindal for his opening remarks.
Thank you, Gautam, and good evening to everybody. Hope all of you are doing well with your family and friends. On behalf of the management team, I welcome you to the earnings call for Q4 and fiscal year 2022 of Jindal Stainless Limited and Jindal Stainless Hisar Limited. First, I would like to share the key highlights of Q4 FY 2022 and the full year, following which Anurag will take you through our operational and financial performance. Stainless steel prices globally and in India remained firm in Q4 FY 2022, with improvement seen throughout the financial year 2022, backed by strong demand. Stainless steel production in calendar year 2021 grew by an impressive 11% year-on-year to 56.2 million tons. The underlying raw material prices remained extremely volatile during the quarter. Nickel prices went up by 33% and ferrochrome increased by 17% in Q4 FY 2022 on a year-on-year basis. In this backdrop, I am happy to share that our robust performance continues in Q4 as well, on the back of adaptive strategies in supply chain and product basket management. Despite volatility and global disruption in raw material supply and logistics, JSL's exports doubled to 32% in Q4 FY 2022 on a year-on-year basis, while export proportion from JSHL more than doubled to 18% in Q4 FY 2022 from 8% in Q4 FY 2021. Key domestic sectors like elevators, escalators, railways, which includes wagons, coaches, metros, continue to register a steady demand. Under our local to global initiative, we are in the process of providing customized product solutions for international operations of select domestic customers having a global presence. We have also supplied various critical grades like super duplex and cobalt restricted stainless steel for various nuclear applications and key fertilizer projects. Sales volume in the specialty product division rose by 32% this year, and continuing with this trend, we have achieved highest ever total sales in the blade steel and precision strip segment during Q4 FY 2022. In this context, I am happy to share with you that the first stainless steel footover bridge in the country was commissioned in Navpada, Andhra Pradesh. Other than being key raw material supplier, JSL also played a major role in developing the ecosystem. Another major development, JSHL became the first integrated stainless steel manufacturing company in India to get certified with AS9100D certification, a quality management system for aviation, space, and defense organizations. The certification validates JSHL's competence to constantly meet high stringent standards of the aerospace industry. We are happy that our shareholders and creditors have approved the scheme of arrangement for the merger of GSHL with JSL by an overwhelming majority. This is a testimony to their confidence that the merger is value accretive for all stakeholders of both the companies. With this positive movement, we now expect other relevant processes to be complete in due time in the next 6 to 7 months. On the import front, subsidized imports from China and Indonesia continued. As a result, imports from these two countries were estimated to have risen by 147% and 280% respectively in FY22 over FY21. This also resulted in the share of imports rising to 36% of demand in Q4 FY22 as compared to 24% in Q4 FY21. I am happy to inform you that despite the Russia-Ukraine conflict, we have managed to fulfill our commitment without cancelling any orders. Also, sensing the factor of Ukraine war and supply disruption in EU, we continuously focus on the US market and did highest ever shipments. Our exports to US increased 3 times during FY22. As I told you last time, we are strategically focused on reducing our carbon footprint. Our plan for exploring renewable energy and low-carbon energy transition are on track. We are proactively switching from thermal to renewable energy infrastructure at our plant and are working towards our goal of net zero carbon emissions by 2050. In our continuous efforts to create shareholder value, the board has approved modification in the existing dividend policy of the company that inter alia efforts will be made to target dividend payout up to 20% of PAT of the company on a progressive basis in future. With this, I would like to hand over to Anurag to discuss the operational and financial performances. Thank you.
Thank you, Abhijay. Good evening, everyone, and a warm welcome to warm welcome on this call today. We have shared our investor presentation with the stock exchanges, and today's call and discussions will be around on the same lines. Operating performance has been robust despite many challenges, including high volatility in raw material prices, geopolitical tensions, and supply chain issues. Key segments such as railway coaches, wagons, metro, and infrastructure have been doing well for us. As Abhijay mentioned, especially product division continue to achieve new heights. Our strategic decision to focus on export sales and strengthen its niche value-added product portfolio enabled us to steer through the certain challenging segment in the domestic market and double our export proportion. On a combined entity basis, export stood at 21% of total sales in FY22 as against 15% in FY21. Let us look at the key operational and financial highlights of the quarter. On a year-on-year basis, the pro forma combined revenue and EBITDA for Q4 FY22 rose by 56% and 47% respectively to Rs. 9,724 crores and Rs. 1,296 crores. The PAT of the same period was more than doubled to Rs. 1,022 crores. On a full year basis, the pro forma standalone combined revenue increased by 70% over FY21 to Rs. 32,620 crores. EBITDA almost doubled up to Rs. 4,740 crores, while PAT grew more than 3x to Rs. 2,949 crores. Along with the parent company, performance of the operating subsidiaries also continued to be strong. The combined EBITDA grew 88% on year-on-year basis to Rs. 143 crore in Q4 FY22. For the full year FY22, the combined EBITDA of the operating subsidiaries rose 2.5x over previous year to Rs. 418 crore. Raw material prices remained volatile throughout the quarter as we have seen some extreme fluctuations in the month of March. The average prices of LME nickel in Q4 FY22 rose by 33% over Q3 FY22, while domestic ferrochrome average prices in Q4 FY22 fell by 6% over Q3 FY22. Our focused risk management practices helped us to mitigate the underlying commodity risk to a large extent and continue to have a steady margins. At the end of FY22, our pro forma combined entity net debt stood at Rs. 3,162 crore, which is down by 33% as against March 21 level. Leverage ratio has been consistently improving, The pro forma debt equity and debt EBITDA ratio stood at 0.3 and 0.7 respectively. With the fall in our borrowing rates, the combined interest cost declined by 33% and 47% in Q4 and FY22 to rupees 74 crore and rupees 327 crore respectively. For the full year FY22, the interest cost stood at just 1% of the combined revenue. Prudent financial management with focus on balance sheet improvement will continue going forward. For both companies, the rating, credit rating for long-term facilities remains at AA-, while the short-term at A1+. The highest rating has been maintained by both the companies. With a strong growth business outlook, we expect further improvement in our long-term credit facilities rating. Maybe, as you are aware, that I am glad to let you know that JSHL has now become a part of the Nifty Metal Index in the month of March. As a company, we will continue to explore on new business opportunities while strengthening our existing base. We are confident that our robust product portfolio along with strategic geographical presence, focus on capital allocation for balance sheet improvement and improving shareholder value will continue. Well, this brings to the end of my discussion. I would like now request moderator to open the floor for the Q&A session.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Also, please limit your questions to two per participants. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from Amit Dixit with Edelweiss. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a good set of numbers. I have two questions. The first one is essentially on our sales mix. So if I see the domestic sales volume is down YoY, however, export sales have gone up two times. Now, what looks like that imports are taking away the incremental growth in the domestic market. We have also seen that progressively protectionist measures for stainless steel industry are being diluted. So how are we working with the government to ensure that our interests are protected? And in particular, we are coming up with new capacity. So will the new capacity be directed towards only exports? Because domestic market looks quite capped, at least as of now, I mean, considering the influx of imports.
Thanks, Amit, for your question. So, yes, it's a continuous process with the government, you know, to keep showcasing that how much imports are coming in and how the industry is being hurt by it. So, just recently, Steel Minister and his full top senior team had visited our Jajpur plant. And there we really in detail discussed with them and he has committed to take it up very strongly internally within their own systems, you know, and we are constantly anyway approaching DRU and finance department that what has done is really hurting the industry side. There is definitely some positive response. They are also aware of the fact that it is China that is the main you know, imported into the country and we are supporting more Chinese companies. So they are cognizant of that fact, but will some immediate step be taken? That I cannot commit. But the way the company is now working is that if there are some protectionist measures or not, we will still like to maintain our position and we would like still like to maintain our average margins that we have been, you know, talking about and giving a commitment for. And to your second question, the second question was on exports. If you can repeat the second question.
No, the second part of the question was on essentially the capacity expansion we are coming up with. So, you know, what would be, will it be directed towards export majorly? Because, you know, domestic market looks quite capped in view of
import. Maximum volume would still be consumed in the domestic market itself, because we don't want to lose our market share that we have. But yes, the proportion of export would be increasing coming when the capacity addition comes on.
And Amit, going forward, domestic market also, as you have seen last few years, we have seen that import competition is more onto the commoditized product range. But certain simultaneously, there is a little slow pace of the approval-based segment, but that's also growing faster. So as we our capacity expansion also come, as Amit mentioned, our aim is that irrespective to the geographies and irrespective to the segment, how we actually penetrate these high-end segments. So that we will continue. So domestic market also, the approval-based and high-quality segments are also increasing their demand gradually.
Okay. The second question is essentially on JUSL blast furnace expansion, that is 2 MTPA. It is, I mean, being reported that they are putting up 2 MTPA blast furnace. So just wanted to understand the relative economics of producing stainless steel with hot metal and mild steel scrap. Can you give us the comfort that JSL or JSHL will not support the capex in any way through ICD or any, you know, buying any equity stake directly as a company in JUSL?
Okay, so I'll take this question. This is Sujay. So the first question is how this fits into this, you know, the hot metal, whether it is fitting into the whole scheme of the thing or not. So just let me tell you that stainless steel, by and large, they consist of almost 70 to 85% of the iron component, that you know. And this iron component is being used from different sources, different, you know, variants. Sometimes it is scrap, sometimes it is, you know, combined with nickel. So in different series, it is a different kind of a, you know, a variant we are using. So, largely speaking, about 200 and 400 series of stainless steel where it is being planned to be used. The raw material which we are consuming is currently carbon steel scrap. Okay. If this carbon steel scrap always, you know, tends to have a parity with the hot metal. When this material, the raw material in the form of hot metal turned into liquid steel, when it is used in stainless steel, it brings in a huge advantage in terms of, you know, number one, productivity, number two, the cost. Cost-wise, it is cheaper by almost 4,000 rupees per ton. It gives that advantage in the cost. So, using hot metal turned into liquid steel into the stainless steel definitely brings in advantage in terms of cost, and second biggest advantage it brings in is the quality. So this hot metal turned into liquid steel always have a very low phosphorus content, the other tramp elements which actually, you know, give impetus in terms of better quality, you know, better properties in the you know, end product, and this gives huge advantage in terms of, you know, various applications where this steel is being used, stainless steel is being used.
Okay, and the second part of the question that, you know,
second part of the question, yeah, I mean, I'll take the second part of the question. So basically, as Mr. Sood mentioned, this is purely basically for focusing on the 400 series and 200 series where the nickel content is low, where it's always better to use, there are cost, not always, I would say there are cost efficiencies which come from this. So, from JSL perspective, there is no corporate guarantee which has been given to JUSL. Just let me clarify that thing for that. There is no obligations which have been given. We also have a 26% stake in JUSL. So, corresponding to our requirement, we will have only that much of corresponding to our stake, which matches with more or less what we are doing for 400 series and 200 series is close to 500,000 to 600,000 tons. That is what our requirement for the from blast furnace route. So we will be only obliged for that much of part, and that is only our limited to our 26% stake of the in JUSL. Otherwise, JUSL and JCL separately are getting merged. JCL has both of so JUSL has excess hot strip mill capacity right now, which have been also generating the carbon steel tolling revenue. JCL itself has been generated a good cash in last 2 years because of both Dreamland and the Coke. So they have their own surpluses also available, and they will be funding through their own resources. It will be a combination of debt and equity primarily.
Okay, so our contribution would be to the extent of 26% only, any financial contribution?
Yes, that will be limited to only that part.
And equity part only, we won't be extending any intercorporate debt or something to support them.
It will not be intercorporate debt like this, means it will be like depending on their how they fund the overall pattern. Accordingly, that's why I'm saying overall their project with our requirement, which is just 600,000, we'll all be contributing 26%. Now, see, on intercompany deposit, let me tell you this way. I think there are security deposits which are there for the tolling arrangements. So, which are actually already with us, but that is only for the commitment of these lines to us, because they have been doing carbon steel tolling also. So, prioritization is being given for JSL for that part. So it's only to that extent, otherwise we will not be putting any other large ICDs towards that.
Okay, thanks. Great, that's it. I will come back in the queue and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ritesh Shah with Investec. Please go ahead.
First, operational performance, I specifically had a few questions pertaining to blast furnace. First is, what is the rationale of having this incremental capex at JUSL and why not at JSL? That is one. Secondly, what I picked up is you indicated that the usage will be only to the extent of 600 KT. What sort of economic benefit are we looking at it over here versus a potential capex, if you can guide for some number? That's the first question, sir.
So I think Ritesh, let me just answer. I think first question is why in this capex in JUSL and not in JSL, right?
Yes, sir.
Right. So see, let me answer that question, because see, as I said you that when we looked at the smaller blast furnace putting in JSL was not getting any of the right optimization level, because then it would have been a much not a right optimized capex and would have got to a much higher cost onto us as well as operational cost. That's the reason we thought that the optimized blast furnace can only be put up on the JUSL, because that's the reason JUSL decided, because they, as part of our, since we are increasing the capacity, they are anyway aligning with their increasing the hot strip mill capacity also simultaneously. So besides our requirement, then they get into their own carbon steel arrangement separately. So that's the reason they will be putting up, they are evaluating to put up an appropriate size blast furnace and JUSL. So JSL, that's the reason smaller blast furnace doesn't make economic sense for JSL, because our requirement for this type of blast furnace is largely for 400 series and partly for 200 series, as Mr. Sood mentioned. 300 series is always better to be done through a nickel scrap route. So that's the question one. Your second question was, can you repeat the second question?
So just to continue with the first question, why not at JSL, given eventually the plan was for also JUSL to be merged into the parent entity? This might happen probably 3 years, 5 years out. Then this is something which is core to the operation. Then why not do it at the parent listed entity itself?
See, because the reason is that the hot strip mill is currently over there at JUSL level, and eventually you are right that at some point of time we have to integrate the JUS this hot strip mill in JSL. But at when they have their own level of balance sheet ratios. Now, if we do another blast furnace capex here, and which out of which if we have an idle capacity of blast furnace, it will not be optimum size blast furnace for us. So we'll have to have then idle capacity of the blast furnace, we'll have to find another utilization of that. Integratedly without hot strip mill, we cannot have a carbon steel then in that case. So it will be more, it will not be any economic sense for the doing the large blast furnace in JSL at all. That's the reason JUSL is doing that capping, because they have integrated. They have their own coke oven because JCL is getting merged. They have a hot strip mill. That's the reason we can have a completely integrated play for the carbon steel or the 400 series sort of metal. and we only use it on a tolling arrangement. This is on need basis without any large capex commitment towards it. Because right now there's no we don't want to commit a large capex in JSL.
Right. Sir, if I had to ask you, what is the current capital employed for JUSL and what will be the approximate capex that we are looking at over here? I'm just trying to understand if we had to merge both the entities, if we were looking at like 3 years, 4 years out, are we just not prolonging the time frame for the merger for the two entities? And again, from a conversion cost or from a related party transaction point of view, don't you think that the market won't probably look at it in a more comfortable way?
So, I think let me tell you from the related party perspective, all these tolling arrangements were actually defined by the lenders when we did a split. And it's completely on those lines and it's fully in the public domain. There is no, and every time we took a transparency, those approvals and it's consistent. So we are not changing that. I think that's been consistent. We have, in fact, to an extent, even when we are, we'll be now needing more tolling. So they are incurring the capex to increase their hot strip mill capacity. So it will be related party transactions are completely on arm's length and purely on it. In fact, they are doing outside carbon steel tolling. So they have benchmarks against that. So and we can always take a cognizance of that. So from that perspective, we are surely at some advantage from JUSL. So because though they are benchmarks, because they are doing not only for us, they are doing for other carbon steel players separate tolling. So that's the reason. I hope this answers your question.
So just last to conclude on the numbers, I think what I picked up is around 5,000 rupees and 600 kq of volume, which essentially means the cost saving that we are looking at is around 300 crores. Corresponding to this, what is the sort of capex that we are looking at? Is it upwards of 2,500-3,000 crores? So how should one look at the payback over here and what would it mean on the ESG? Specifically, we are going for pig iron. I think won't it increase the scope 1 and 2 emissions because we tend to look at the entity together.
See, Ritesh, if I understand correctly, you are asking for from JUSL economics perspective?
Yes, sir. So if the incremental capex is, say, 2,500, what I could pick up from the data point what you gave, is 5,000 rupees per ton and 600 kt of volume, that volume sums up to nearly 300 crores. So what is the sort of capex that we are looking to chase this cost saving of 300 crores? That's the first question, sir.
Okay, Ritesh, let me answer this. The advantage what we are getting in stainless steel is not what you are trying to tell. It is 4,000 rupees on an average, you know, per ton of hot metal turned into liquid steel we are using into the stainless steel. Okay, so what actually Anurag had told, we are consuming up to 75% of this liquid carbon steel into stainless steel. So by this arrangement, we are able to consume on the current product mix, we are able to consume almost 0.6 million tons of hot metal turned into liquid steel. So that brings in almost, currently, largely speaking, about 250 crore rupees per annum. That is the, you know, advantage we get in the JSL. Over the, you know, current set of parameters, what we are using in the form of scrap or low-cost scrap, this is the advantage we get in JSL.
Right. Sure, sir. I just had one last question for Abhyuday, if it's possible. Sir, if you are deploying this sort of capex, I don't know the number, 2,500, 3,000 crores, won't it be fair for us to go and chase a nickel mine or a chrome ore mine somewhere else, wherein the cost advantage could probably be far more superior?
So, Ritesh, that's a very good question, and this was actually deliberated a lot. And if you see that there is no chrome ore asset available within the country itself, that would have been definitely our priority. And we were in a big fight with Tata's also when these mines in Sukinda were being auctioned off. And we went up to a very high percentage level. But after, at the price that Tata took it, it became unviable for us also. You know, so that was definitely our priority. Nickel mines, we have gone in the past, we have burnt our fingers. So to really protect our EBITDA margins, to really give more value addition to our shareholders, we felt that this was the best possible investment that we could do. And second thing that, you know, what is a big operating leverage that we have created is that to set up a standalone carbon steel project of this size, on average it costs around 6,000 to 7,500 crores. You know, but our investment would not be more than 3,000 crores.
Less than
2,500 to create full carbon steel setup at a 2 million ton level. You know, so that is why we felt that it's definitely a big investment. But looking at the company's financials, looking at our...
JUSL and JCL are actually have got much, and as I told you that JCL, JUSL have a good cash approvals run because of... not only us, because JCL also actually only 25% material is sold to us, otherwise 75% goes to outside market, and because of the run they have in the past, so there is a good cash accrual in those two companies.
So per se, there was no, even from a M&A perspective, there was no stainless steel asset that was really available, or even a carbon steel asset also we looked at, you know, but they were much bigger and much more expensive than what the company could take up. So investing into our own setup, which is a clear benefit coming in tender side, which is why this decision was taken. It was after a long-term deliberation only.
And see, as I mentioned that we are not committing any large capex in JSL for this purpose. That was the idea not to have, because those are standalone companies and they will have their own funding arrangement.
Sure, sir. So, sir, just to conclude, so we are looking at JUSL probably as a carbon steel entity. The listed entity will continue to be stainless steel. And should one presume that ESG will actually take a back seat, given if we look at scope 1 and 2 together?
No, I wouldn't really say that it would take a back seat, because we are making stainless steel anyway has, you know, a leg up over carbon steel, and we are investing heavily into ESG right now. You know, it's not only from environment side. In ESG, there's also social and there's governance as well. So you will see us investing heavily into all three aspects of the business.
See,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next question is from Rajesh Mazumdar with P&K SEC. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks for taking the question and congratulations for the set of numbers. So, sir, I actually had a couple of questions on the product mix and the margin side. One was that we have been talking a lot about the infrastructure series going up to a certain percentage level because of the greatest focus of the government. But if you look at the numbers in Q4, only 22% came from the 400 series, and exports have gone up substantially. So is this something which is a little bit alarming in terms of our product mix change at the 400 level? That was my first question.
Is Rajesh, your question is that series by 400 series has not moved much. Is this your question?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Broadly, that's the question. Yeah.
See, overall, our focus continues to remain the 400 series, to improve all the 400 series mix, and which is gradually increasing with auto, railways, and all these are actually consuming that. In the intermittent, as we explained earlier, that idea is to get the best margin orders first and get it booked. So some of the exports market where we do some of the high-end to US and Europe, that was also a large 300 series order. Some of the orders were catered. So strategic direction is very clear that it's to continue to grow 400 series, which is also matching with the way countries demand in particularly our addressable market segments are growing. But in the intermittently, obviously we don't want to lose the size on because we have a flexibility to build any kind of product range for any segment. That's really giving us the advantage to capture the best margin order at that particular point of time. So idea is not to just in a focus on a strategic direction, not to dilute on the margins and leave away some of the best margins order at that particular point of time.
And you know, because of this nickel volatility that we have seen, it's a natural extension that demand from consumer side in 400 series is also going to pick up. You know, so that way, from Q4 last year to Q4 this year, definitely 400 series and has increased by, I think, 5 to 6%. And naturally itself, you will see by natural consumer demand and the effort company is making that every quarter on quarter, 400 series will pick up.
So, you know, see any kind of slowdown in terms of government spending, because we've been hearing talk that now fertilizer subsidies are going up and inflation trend, crude oil going up so high, government expenditure can be coming off rightly. Are you seeing any kind of trend which might prompt us to believe that over the next couple of quarters also exports will remain high?
No, we are not seeing that. And one of the strengths of our organization is that we are very flexible and we're not dependent on any one particular segment to a very large extent. So, like you mentioned, if domestic market being open to imports, we've increased our exports. Similarly, if government projects, some of them, which at least in our case have not really been cancelled or delayed, you know, we can easily switch over to any other segment. So that is one of the USPs of our organization.
Right. So I didn't hear anything from you in terms of guidance for EBITDA per ton. Is there any change or what are we likely to see in the next coming quarters?
See, EBITDA per ton, Rajesh, long term we have always been consistent in our guidance that at this stage, till the time new expansion is completely unfolds, 18,000 to 20,000 is our average guidance. Right now, for the near term in quarter one, I think it will be close to more at 22,000 to 24,000 what we expect, though there are much of volatility in terms of power cost and all this thing, but with all these volatility, we are expecting to have that type of run rate in quarter one in near term.
And the benefit from a slow more mine store will be coming in this year? Can we expect that to come in because we've been talking about it?
Okay. I think the chrome ore operations will start within a year time. That is common boundary mining with Tata and BL.
Right. So from next year onwards.
Yeah, almost next year. Yes. By the end of this year.
So that's like 14. So that will be in sync with our expansion, more or less.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, sir. I'll come back in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Abhijit Mitra with ICICI Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question and congrats on a great set of numbers. So I have a few questions on the JUSL CapEx. So just to sort of clarify the investment of 2,500 crores, it would be over how many years?
Over 2 year period.
2 years, FY 23 and FY 24, okay. And you know, assuming say at the equity of 40:60 or 50:50, so JSL will sort of fund 25 or 26% of that. Is that the understanding? So anywhere between 250 to
60. See, there's no specific which has been come up because this project is also still under the finalization at JUSL level that how they will be unfolding this because and there they have their own earning streams also. So it's not that it's, what I'm saying is that broadly that we will not get to any of the other funding support beyond these levels. That's what our broad outer target is. But otherwise, it's not that we'll have to even fund from that perspective. It's not that. It's only that we'll have to ensure that our hotel, what we need the tolling arrangement for from their hotel terminal, at least that is remain protected when we increase our capacity. Because we are doubling our capacity, so we need those much of guarantees from the JUSL. At least those are actually remain protected because they have their own outside tolling business also.
Okay, so just two more questions on the tolling arrangement and the future tolling arrangement once the blast furnace comes up. How will the tolling arrangement look like? So one is, of course, through the HSM that we are taking. We would also be buying the hot metal from them, right? And for that, will we supply iron ore and chrome ore and then buy the hot metal, or it will be just buying hot metal like, you know, purchasing pig iron from the market? How will that be?
See, this is not, this is still, I'll let you list, blast furnace, whenever they, even when they start, it will at least be two years away at least. So those we are not even thought of those. Right now our thing is that our tolling arrangement with JUSL will only be limited to our orchestra mill capacity. So this is still at least two financial year away.
Okay, but you mentioned that 600 KT, 4,000 rupees per ton. I thought you were referring to that, right? When you're sort of...
No, that was only for the purpose of giving the economics that what is, why we didn't put up the blast furnace in this, because our requirement of blast furnace is not large. That's what the answer to that question, that our requirement is only limited to 400 series and some part of 200 series. Because otherwise we will continue to focus on the scrap route. Only from those perspective where we get a cost advantage that we wanted to leverage. So that was in answer to that question. It's not, because there is no capacity available in JUSL right now for this purpose. So it's at least 2 years away when they start working on this.
Okay,
so and there is no capex on them. Also, the capex outflow will also not be immediate. So they will also have their spread over to 24 months at least. So they, by the time they will have next 2 years earnings of their own thing also.
Right. So what is the current year EBITDA for JUSL and JCL, if you can tell me, and what is the combined net debt that it's looking at?
Since this call is on JSL, I think Gautam and Shreya, I think, can give you obviously those numbers for JSL. It's not right for us to comment on those numbers, but we can, I think they can help you out with those numbers.
Sure. I'll take it from them. Great. Thanks. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
Next question is from Chetan Shah with Abacus AMC. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, Ken. Just one small clarification. For the current year, what is the volume growth for the combined entity we are expecting? I believe on a TV we said about 18-20% growth.
No, so FY23, we will not have much volume growth because we are running almost at full capacity and most of the new capacities will be coming at the back end of this fiscal year in Feb, March. So this year we will probably end up out of almost a flat growth because we don't have a capacity. But FY24 over 23, because new capacities will be coming at the end of this fiscal, so FY24 over 23 will be a good 20% plus growth.
Okay. Got it. Thanks, Anurag. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Vishal Chandak. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks for taking my question, sir. Just continuing with the JUSL and proposed JSL transaction. So when we are speaking about 4,000 rupees per ton savings, could you please help us understand in which part of the process are we expecting this saving?
At a melt shop level. Yeah.
So the idea is that getting the hot metal, molten metal will lead to savings. Is this the energy cost that we are talking about? Remelting pig iron, is that what we are talking about? Is the saving?
Yeah, Vishal, this hot metal will not be used directly. It will be first turned into liquid steam. And then this liquid steel will be actually used in the stainless steel manufacturing, in the melting furnace. So definitely what we are saying, 4,000 rupees, it will be total direct and indirect saving.
Means we would be receiving the liquid steel from JUSL, or we would be receiving liquid steel, right?
We would be receiving liquid steel from JUSL.
Okay, after they turn it into their melt shop, we'll be getting the liquid steel.
Correct.
So, instead of buying, let me put it this way, sir, instead of buying a slab, we are purchasing liquid steel so that we can process it through the AOD and make stainless steel.
Okay, so let me explain in slightly detail. This liquid steel, what we are going to get is basically plain carbon liquid steel. It will not have any chromium, any manganese, any other alloying element. So it will be plain carbon steel. This plain carbon steel will be fed into the AOD process. AOD furnace, and there it will be turned into, converted into stainless steel with the refining. We will make additions of chromium, manganese, and whatever alloying elements are required, and then it will be basically turned into stainless steel. It is not that directly we can actually make it in the stainless steel. It is carbon steel, you know, fed into the stainless steel AOD converter, and then it is actually made into the stainless steel.
Got it. Sir, in this context, I'm sure you would have evaluated that instead of putting in an capex in JUSL, would it have been more advantageous and cleaner structure to have a smaller electric arc furnace of about, you know, 0.6 million tons per annum capacity? That would have served a dual purpose. It would have generated the kind of liquid steel that you would wanted, and it would have also served as a steel melt shop in terms, you know, whenever you want to have a flexibility in the system. And then obviously you will have no issues with respect to JUSL transaction related party issues, etc.
Okay, let me handle the first question you asked. The savings which are getting accrued, they are largely from the raw materials. Energy savings are a small part of it. Okay, so when you say that you can add it by putting up a, you know, a small electric arc furnace, that was well thought of, but because raw material saving was not happening from that, so it was dropped. Second, you know, option was to put up a small blast furnace, because we were trying to get a benefit of raw metals.
Small blast furnace, we understand it out of question, sir.
Okay, it is out of question. See, what you need to understand is why it cannot be, you know, from electric arc furnace. Because electric arc furnace is not giving you advantage in terms of raw material cost advantage what we are getting from the hot metal. So the large advantage we are having in this scheme of things is hot metal is giving us a huge advantage in terms of cost. That is the thing.
Otherwise, but this would have been an arm's length transaction. But in an arm's length transaction, we would get the metal at the market prices, so the benefit of raw material will stay with JUSL, right?
No, see, let me first tell you, I think it's at least 2 years away and we have not worked out, but obviously there would be a benefit which will be accruing to JUSL, as I am saying, even in the current tolling arrangement. And this is all being subject to various audits and all this, because even in the tolling, they have been doing carbon steel tolling and stainless steel tolling, and we have seen the kind of rate which we are getting as compared to even when the market was at, carbon steel market was also up, because their facilities are also getting completely engaged on those parts. So we will surely get some of the benefit, but I think it's too early to do, because it's at least two fiscal years away. We have been talking about at least FY25 or 26, these type of things. So we have a time to get into this once they conceptualize their full project and how they evolve it.
Sure. That's pretty helpful, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question is from Vikas Singh with Philip Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Hello, am I audible?
Right.
Yeah, sir, I just wanted to understand, once our new 1.1 million ton SMS would come in, how do our product mix is changing? Because I see that a good part of our EBITDA improvement is because of the improved product mix, especially in JHSL. So how the combined entity product mix would change in terms of the percentage of value addition and its impact on our EBITDA per ton going forward?
See, Hisar, our JSHS focus will always remain on value-added products, and our further investment that we have made into precision strips and blade steel, that will always remain a margin business. You know, so going forward, in terms of percentage, it would remain the same.
Yeah, okay. So I'll give you asking specifically this 1.1 to 2.1 when we are going, how much is going to be the change in the product mix? To tell you the about the product mix, it is going to remain almost same. Currently, we are having almost 25% 400 series, 25% 200 series, and 50% 300 series. It is largely going to remain same. What will change is the absolute number. 300 series is going to grow, okay, like in the absolute term. And as Abhijit was telling, yes, Hisar is being continuously focused on blade steel and prison steel. So there we are focused on value addition. Here it is going to be the same product mix. What we had been used, manufacturing right now, we would be putting up that only.
So even after increase, our understanding is that the mix would not change. Is that a correct understanding?
Yes, mix would not change, but here what other things would change, as we had mentioned earlier also, since we are putting up a new ERPR facility, combo facility, our mix of value added will slightly increase. From currently, it is about 50%, it will go up to say around 65%.
Understood. And sir, I actually joined a little bit late because I got dropped on your opening remark. I'm not sure whether you have clarified. Just wanted to understand with the nickel prices are behaving so volatile, how's our inventory situation right now, and have we seen any problems with respect to the new order booking on those series basically?
Okay, since past 2 months, I think nickel is behaving in a very volatile manner, and there are reasons for that. And you know the geopolitical situations and the how, you know, some Chinese trader has his nickel over the LME. We have all these stories available on the internet and everywhere. So going by that, yes, there was some kind of disruption in the marketplace. From the demand side also, there was some kind of confusion from the customer point of view. Okay. But now since nickel has actually gone into the territory of about 30,000 to 36,000, dollars per ton. It is moving in that direction. So the, nickel is completely deallocating. Nickel, which is being used in stainless steel manufacturing, it is getting dealing from the LME. Now, this stainless steel business, we are using nickel in the form of scrap, nickel pig iron, or ferronickel. So probably somewhere, if nickel remains in this highly volatile, behaves still in the highly volatile manner, probably it will be totally delinkage in the future. But what we see in the near terms, since there is some confusion and basically from the demand side, how to put it, You want to pitch in, because I'm slightly confused. There is a small confusion in the demand side, and probably somewhere from the customer angle, probably that demand is not getting picked up. So the point you are trying to make is that how we are actually trying to
hedge coping up with this situation.
Pardon me?
So what I want to exactly know that how we are coping up with this situation, what kind of the impact we are witnessing right now, and exactly what are the steps we are taking to cope up?
Because it is getting daily, and our manufacturing is based on scrap and nickel pig iron and ferronickel. So we are not into that kind of a thing, and our manufacturing is largely based on that. So from the cost point of view, we are well under control, and by using these type of raw materials and these type of nickel variants.
Sorry, sir, I did not understand. Basically, what I wanted to understand is how much of the volume has been impacted, how on those series, and exactly had we seen any improvement, because now it seems to be stabilizing. So the lost volume, some part of it is coming back to us, or is still the market is confused state, and it would take time to normalize?
Okay, just to give you the background, see, there is a little bit of lull in the market side, okay? So there has been a slight, there has been some slowness in the market side when we talk of 300 series. But the market has a demand of 200 and 400 series, and market is demanding material in these series. So when nickel is behaving in this fashion, though we are losing,
So what happens is that whenever there is a volatility, the buying pattern typically take a bit of a pause and open sort of situation, because market also customers get confused, especially in the, because nickel is mostly largely as a bearing on 300 series. So in terms of their buying decisions on this, so either some destocking happens for some time and then, but when this volatility happens, largely I think we have not cancelled any single order, let me tell you. I think because we were doing the back-to-back coverage of our raw material. And we were catering to all the orders as committed. In fact, some of the European players, what we said, they reprise the orders later on. But in our case, because some of the volumes could be like, for timing, there was obviously for 300 days was there. Overall, demand continued, but overall, I think in a full year basis, we are confident that we'll meet the full volume. That's not becoming a challenge. So it's not a demand which is giving us the challenge. It's more the buying pattern at that particular volatile period. It always happens.
It's a unique situation in the world right now, which has never been faced by the stainless steel industry. So the concept that the whole world is working on is on lean inventory. No one in the system is talking. Everyone is definitely aware that there is huge volatility of nickel, chrome, mild steel scrap, FS scrap also. So everyone is working on lean inventory, low inventory model. But we really feel it's only for the next, maybe in this quarter only. Then again, it will stabilize because the world cannot operate in this fashion at all. So it's a very unique period that this has happened. It's a unique situation in the whole world, compounding with the Russia-Ukraine factor also. So, but by Q1, we think this whole thing should stabilize and it should be normal course of business after that.
Understood, sir. Sir, just one more, just one last question. In terms of scrap availability and the logistics of it, so we are hearing a lot of things regarding the tight availability, etc. So if you could just explain a little bit on that, how are we placed in terms of that? Have we facing any difficulty in terms of procurement of scraps, etc.?
No, not at all. In terms of availability, because of the kind of partners and the supply chain that we have created, you know, we are very, again, very flexible. We have traders, our partners all across the globe. Focus is always domestic and Southeast Asia and nearby countries, which is exactly where even till now we are able to get all our scrap requirements. So from a raw material perspective, we are in a very comfortable position.
Understood, sir. Thank you for answering my question and all the best for future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ritvik with OneUp Financial Consultants Private Limited. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Hi. Good evening and congrats on a great FY22. So I have a few questions. Firstly, you mentioned that US, we have tripled the volumes in FY22. So is it possible to quantify on an absolute basis? And where do you think this will move over the next three years?
I think, US being one of our target markets, if I can tell you, it's very difficult to say 3 years time what is our exact targeted figures. But this year...
Because see, geographically, as we said, that we keep, because being an agile and flexibility in our product range and geography, we keep changing because of wherever we keep getting the better margin order. So just to give you the perspective overall, in JSL, the large part of the US order which we cater, typically the quarter four, our export mix was 32% of our total sales volume. And on a full year basis, it was 25%. And last year, it was 19%. Now, out of 25% this year, the 15% came from US. Okay. So that was the statistic.
Of the JSL volume?
Yes. So almost 15% of the JSL volumes were actually from US market.
Okay, okay. Sure. So it would be close to 40,000-45,000 of volume in JSL.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. No, the reason I'm asking is that, you know, in the last couple of quarters, you have mentioned that we want to scale up in US market. So, you know, that would be a good diversification and added geography given the imports are coming in the country. So just wanted to get a sense from where this, you know, 40,000 tons will move over the next 3 years, especially when we are doubling our capacity at GSL.
Just to correct, I think it was not on combined volume, it was on actually on GSL volume what I said. I was mentioning the GSL volume, which is close to 1.01 million, and the 15% of was the actually US, that's coming from US markets.
Right, right. Okay, so 15% of the total GSL volume is from the US market.
Of the 10% of the exports. It is 15% is not on export market.
Sir, with this expansion on track by FY23, and we should we would have commissioned the capacity at GSL. So when, in your sense, we can ramp up this to full utilization, and you know, given the fact that a million ton, we would have to look for incremental for probably new geographies as well, since it's a decent enough volume for us to sell.
So it would take about almost a year's time to commission to full capacity, and we see enough demand. There is good growth. Stainless steel is the fastest growing metal, almost growing at about 9% domestically itself, and we see the usages only increasing, like in infrastructure, which was totally dominated by concrete and steel. Now you're going to see stainless steel having a very, very major role to play. Like I mentioned already, we built our first asset put over bridge. And tune like that, 20 bridges itself this year are planned, plus another 300 more in the pipeline. You know, so in terms of our 1 million ton capacity, domestic, we see good growth coming in high-end segments in your process industries. And similarly, like we mentioned, US is going to be a target market for us. So there we further want to increase year-on-year basis.
And just one last clarification. You know, there were a lot of questions on JUSL expansion. So this 2 million ton expansion is an incremental expansion, or right now I believe it's 1 million ton, which will go to 2 million tons over the next 2 to 3 years?
It's separate. 2 million tons additional.
Additional, okay. And so they would have some kind of cash flows as well, right? Since they have a million ton capacity right now. So they would have their cash flows and this 2500 capex over next 2 to 3 years. Would it be fair to assume that the cash flows, 40-50% of the capex requirement would be funded from internal accruals?
Large part of yes, because see, they have a 1.6 million ton capacity of Fortis Terminal right now, which they are increasing to 3.2 separately. So they will have their own tolling revenue, plus JCL, General Coke, which is also sell the Coco one also. So that also is actually getting merged. So they've combined, they will have a healthy cash flows. And they don't have a much of the debt liabilities at this stage for next 3-4 years.
Okay, sir. Maybe I'll take this offline.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ashish Kejriwal with Centrum Broking. Please go ahead, sir.
Three questions for me. One is, we have seen in FY22 that a part of our earnings got captured in working capital, and because of that fact, we are unable to reduce our debt. So first is, where we are in the working capital cycle. Do we think that is going to ease from the current level, or it will increase, or how it is? Second is it possible to give a cash flow capex guidance for FY23? Because in FY22, I think we have spent only 750 crore. So how the capex will happen in FY23 when we are going to finish all the projects? And third, you mentioned about the dividend policy, but is it possible that we can have some elaborative capital allocation policy? Because, you know, maybe in a year or 2 years time framework, we will be debt free. So, you know, it's very important for us to understand what our thought process is going forward in terms of capital allocation. Thank you.
So, Okay, actually, let me answer one. So working capital is purely because of the function of the raw material prices. And if the prices come down, it will immediately ease out. So because our increase is purely linked with the higher raw material prices, because the volumes are also actually at a peak level. So not possible to give the commitment number, because if the raw material prices remain high, this will remain at the same level. But if it comes down, say, half, our working capital requirement, we have seen that in the past also, immediately it will come down drastically. Because it's only the deployment which we'll have to do primarily for the inventory purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's on working capital side, because it's, it's not right for us to predict the raw material prices, because we, our focus is always to have a just complete risk management strategy. So we keep balancing between our sales and the sourcing, so not to take up any of the commodity exposures with us.
Just on this working capital only, what we are seeing is in FY22, number of days of inventory has reduced drastically. Despite this fact, this is happening. So I don't know how, first of all, this number of days has declined so drastically in FY22. And despite that, we are having such working capital pressure.
See, because if you see the underlying raw material prices have increased considerably.
Mm-hmm.
That's because when you look at just on a 1-point, 2-point number, because the average deployment comes from the previous, when you close that, it's because of the previous almost 3 months average basis.
Okay.
So, raw material prices have increased, it's purely reflection of prices. That's what I said. See, the moment it comes down, so our days, we are keeping a very close check. So, we are not increasing, neither we are increasing our exposures in terms of the, any of the underlying commodity. That's what our prime focus is. And debtor days are also completely remain under control. So, it's not, the increase is not pursuant to that increase in changes in the days. It's purely because of the prices which we'll have to maintain, depending on that, also depends on the particular series. So, if you have a larger 300 series campaigns going on at that particular point of time at the end of the quarter, you will see a much higher inventories at that point of time, because that we have seen when most of the export order was being catered from 300 series. So therefore, you will see a large inventory. But if similar thing happens, say 400 series, then again, it will be a different inventory level at in all.
Sure.
Okay, so, and capex side, so out of the total committed capex of 2600 crore, we spent close to 950 or close to 1000 crore in FY22. And FY23, this year, we expect close to 1200, because some of the spillover capex of the last year will come, because we earlier guided you for close to 1100 crore capex, and this year we expect close to 1200 crore to 1300 crore of the capex as we are finishing the project. Maintenance capex will be separate, which we say which will ranges between the 300 to 400 crore range.
Between this, you are talking about the combined entity, yes?
Combined entity, right.
Okay.
On dividend, or if you say the shareholder's return policy, this is mostly because whether in the form of, whether in what form we will get to this, this has to be decided at the time by the board at the time when they get to this. But idea was that too, because earlier we were having a very generic dividend policy, the board deliberated this, and since we, depending on our earnings and all the things, we then have decided that board took a decision that we progressively we should target to reach towards 20% of the shareholders' return.
So I was looking at more of capital allocation policy, which dividend policy could be a part of it. But what could be our strategic capital allocation policy? Let's say by, you know, free cash flows, how you want to distribute it in terms of growth, in terms of deleveraging, in terms of dividend distribution. Is there any policy which is in our mind?
Sure, that's a good suggestion. Once we complete this deployment of this capex, I think sometime, I think by the end of next fiscal year, we'll see that how we should evolve this, because once our this capex, current capex cycle gets over by end of the next this fiscal year.
Sure. Thanks and all the best.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Due to time constraint, this will be the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Vishal Chandak for closing comments. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining in for today's call. I think this was a very healthy and lively discussion. I would request Mr. Abhyuday Jindal for his closing remarks. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. I would like to thank everyone for attending this call. Despite many challenges from raw material price volatility to supply chain disruption to geopolitical tensions, our robust performance is a testimony to our agile and focused business strategy. Prudent financial management has been complementing strong operational performance. I hope we have been able to answer all your questions. Should you have any further clarification or would like to know more about the company, please feel free to contact our investor relations team. And we have taken note of all the questions and all the concerns. So definitely in the next call, we will try to answer in a more detailed fashion. So thank you once again for taking out the time to join us on this call. And stay safe.
Thank you. On behalf of Motilal Oswal, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.